You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, a podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, what is an OCD monster? I am your host, Noah Laracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral and cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. And today we're fortunate to have our very first special guest on the podcast, our friend and distinguished colleague, Dr. Sarah Hyder.
Hi, Noah.
Dr. Hyder is a licensed psychologist who specializes in the treatment of pediatric anxiety and OCD. Today we're continuing our journey into OCD, and today we're going to talk about pediatric OCD or kids with OCD. So let's talk about how does OCD show up in children?
A lot of times what we'll see in kids, especially younger kids, is that they're not able to articulate their feelings. And we can tell that they have anxiety because they may have what we call somatic complaints. That's when they get stomach aches or they might have pain. So it shows up in their body. And along with that, you might get school refusal. And the school refusal may be because of these stomach aches or that they're not feeling well. We can also see that OCD shows up in kids' major temper tantrums, and this could actually be a panic attack that's triggered from the OCD. So it looks like a meltdown or a temper tantrum, and in fact, it's panic.
Dr. Hyder has some really great points, and I think overall it's important to recognize that many of the symptoms that appear in pediatric OCD may resemble other diagnoses. For example, ADHD with the hyperactive compulsions or the inattentiveness because the kid is ruminating about whatever the fear is. And just to give you a little bit of statistics, Noah, there are at least one in 200 kids and teens with OCD. That is a lot of kids. This is actually double the number of kids with diabetes. And as I've said before, anxiety, OCD is more common than any of the other psychiatric disorders, especially in kids.
So you mentioned that there are a lot of somatic or bodily complaints. How would you know whether this was an actual stomach ache or whether it was OCD?
With somatic complaints, it is an actual stomach ache. So it's experienced as real pain. And it's important to understand that if the child is complaining that they're not feeling well, that is an accurate complaint. So it's more important to understand what is causing the stomach ache, what is behind it. So what we'll see with kids with anxiety is that this is persistent and that even after you may attempt to treat it medically, that the stomach aches are still there, that the pain is still there, and you can begin to see a pattern emerge oftentimes where it may only occur on certain days where there's, for instance, gym class, or it may only occur at certain times of the day, such as the morning when it's time to go to school. You can normally link it with some sort of environmental factor, and it typically doesn't go away until the child either has to face their fear or they're able to avoid that fear. And then we see these somatic complaints dissipate. Whereas if it were from a medical origin, such as a stomach bug, it doesn't matter if they go to school or not, they're still gonna be suffering.
Can you talk about some specific behaviors that you can observe in a child that would show the red flag that OCD might be lingering?
A big one is reassurance seeking. There are the typical, what I call quirky compulsions, which may be more obvious, such as washing or checking or writing and erasing and rewriting. And these are what we typically connect with OCD. In kids, there is also a lot of reassurance seeking from parents. And this means checking in, am I going to be okay? Are you sure I'm going to be okay? Kids can become very clever at asking the same question slightly differently over and over again. And they'll do the same thing for teachers. And it stands out to teachers. It's a good thing typically when kids ask questions. And yet a child with OCD will ask the same question, am I doing this problem correctly? Did I do this problem the right way? Is this what you wanted me to turn in? Can you look this over to make sure I got it right? You know, they'll ask the same question over and over. Another thing that we'll see with kids is something called a need to know, where they may ask, again, the same question slightly differently, trying to find out as much information as possible about what's behind these questions. It's a fear or it's their obsession. So they may ask a lot of very detailed questions, for instance, about how you catch a cold. And it moves beyond curiosity. And the red flag for adults, parents, teachers, and caregivers is that even after they've answered the question, the child will persist and will continue to ask that question differently.
So how does OCD then show up at school? I would imagine school is going to be a lot more difficult if you have OCD along with you, right?
Absolutely. You know, again, like what I was saying earlier, that OCD can appear as many of the other common psychiatric disorders that teachers are often going to label kids with. So, for example, ADHD is a very common diagnosis. Bipolar is now the new sexy diagnosis for kids who are going from very, very hyperactive, very energetic, jumping off walls to then suddenly becoming very quiet, very isolated, very withdrawn. And the reality is that there are kids with OCD who can resemble some of these other diagnoses. The most important question, though, is not just to look at what the presenting symptom is. So you can't really diagnose a child just by observing the behavior. You really have to dig deeper and look at what are the underlying causes, what are the underlying reasons. Why is this kid so hyperactive? Is it because it's neurological? Is it because the kid just had a bunch of cookies and therefore has a sugar high? Or is it because the kid can't stop moving around because he or she is feeling anxious because he or she feels contaminated and therefore is wiggling around his seat and wanting to go to the bathroom to wash and has to find a way to restrain himself from wiggling around? So it's very common for kids to be mislabeled, misdiagnosed, and often we see kids coming in to the Renewed Freedom Center having been diagnosed with many other common psychiatric disorders such as ADHD or bipolar, when in fact they actually have anxiety disorders or OCD.
Kids with OCD, I know sometimes they struggle with routines in the morning, getting to school, getting home, also doing homework. How do you see that showing up in your patients?
Sure. It's a lot of what you suggested. It can be very difficult to get these kids out of the door in the morning, which is something, I say this with a smile, that I think a majority of parents would feel that way. If they had to describe mornings, they would say it's really hard to get us all out of the door in time. You have to, again, look at what's behind that. So for a lot of families, it's because kids are tired and groggy in the morning and are sort of grumbling and it's hard to pile everyone in the car. For the OCD kid, it's because they have a lot of routines that they need to go through. So these are the kids that may need to lace up their shoes exactly right, or that become panicked because something doesn't feel just right and they can't leave until they get the feeling that, okay, everything is just right at the home and so now I can move on to the next location. So it can really impact getting ready and getting started in the day.
Another time that is where OCD strikes most is actually at bedtime. So the two times that we commonly see OCD striking the hardest is first thing in the morning and then last thing before going to bed. And these are periods where parents will often see more of the ritualed behaviors. So for example, like what Dr. Heider was saying, in the morning, the kids can be engaged in compulsions. They can be checking to make sure they've got all of their paperwork together, all of their books together. They can be perfecting whatever it is that they need to get done in order to get out the door. And of course, family members are going to wait for the kids. So the kids are usually going to be delayed. However, at bedtime, then the rituals may change. It may change to checking for safety, making sure that all of the doors are locked and all of the blinds are shut. It could be checking to make sure that there aren't any creepy crawly spiders in the room. It could be seeking more reassurance from parents. It could be that the kids would need parents to say, "I love you," in 20 different ways. And one more time, just for safekeeping. So bedtimes and morning times are usually the times when parents will see most of the obsessions and compulsions.
And what about eating and eating habits? How does OCD affect that?
OCD can really impact eating and eating habits on two different levels. So we see a lot of vomit phobia in conjunction with OCD. And what that can look like are a lot of OCD compulsions related to which are good foods and which are bad foods, in terms of which foods am I most likely to throw up if I eat these foods. Kids may not eat food, they may check for expiration date. They may not eat foods that they've known other people to throw up from. So we see it in that sense for the overlap of vomit phobia and OCD. And we also see good foods and bad foods, and certain foods bring about a fear for kids. So if you see a lot of kids are picky eaters, when it's OCD, it goes beyond picky eating, it goes beyond a downright refusal to even try the food with a fear response versus a "I don't want to, I don't think it will be good" response.
And you know, the picky eater, it's kind of like, okay, I have my preferences in food. I like ice cream and I don't like broccoli, and therefore I'm not going to have broccoli, which meant most kids are not going to like broccoli or dark leafy greens. However, the kid with OCD, there's a different feel about them. It's more about the safety of the food. Is this food going to be safe for me to consume? Is it going to cause me to feel sick? Is it going to cause me to vomit? Is it going to give me diarrhea, or is it going to make me feel nauseous? Is it going to make me feel bloated and therefore I can't tolerate that feeling, so therefore it becomes not safe? And the problem is, for these kids, they will refuse to try new foods which they are unfamiliar with. So it doesn't really open up their repertoire for the different nutrients that they'll need throughout their lifetime. And once they've engaged with a specific food, so let's say tofu, and they vomited from tofu, or they felt weird after they've consumed tofu, well, now that tofu goes into the bad food category and will no longer be tolerated or even acceptable into their diet. And that can be a real problem for their nutrition and overall health.
And the other thing we see with OCD is that kids with OCD can be highly suggestible. You don't know what their OCD brain may glob onto. So we've worked with kids with OCD where they might have overheard an aunt at a family gathering saying, "Oh, I've given up carbs because they're not healthy." And then you've got a 7-year-old who's continually asking, "Are there carbs in this?" We've had kids who have overheard parents saying, "You can't have more than one slice of cake. There's too much sugar in it. That's not healthy." And then you've got kids who take this to an extreme and won't even have a single piece of candy, let alone their own birthday cake. So what we see for these kids is that they'll take these suggestions to an extreme level, which turns into the compulsion.
So how does OCD affect kids' relationships with other kids?
Well, it just depends. A lot of times, kids are actually able to be mindful and stay in the present moment when they are in certain situations, such as when they are with friends. And you may not see the OCD the same way that it becomes apparent at home. And similarly, you may not see it at home and you may only see it at school or vice versa. So sometimes having these kids spend time with their friends actually brings them great relief from their obsessions and therefore their compulsions. At other times, though, the compulsions become very apparent with friends, and we can see a lot of avoidance behaviors. And it's very sad because because these are kids who are typically a very social and joy spending time and interacting with other kids their same age. And we'll see them begin to avoid those interactions because they become embarrassed of their compulsions and they don't want these other kids to see them engaged in their compulsions. So it becomes a real tug of war internally for the child where they want to spend time with their peers and yet feel that they're not able to do so.
I would also add to that, for the kid who is able to keep it together when he's in social situations, the reality of that situation is that when the kid comes home, that's when all of the compulsions come out. That is when they've held it together for so long, they can't hold it anymore, and now the family members are seeing the breadth of the intensity of the compulsions.
So these kids know that something is wrong, that something's up. Do they have any sort of a sense?
Yes. Oftentimes, they know more than their parents or the adults around them that something is going on. And we actually conceptualize this as an OCD monster, to externalize the OCD and to really give not only the child, the whole family and any extended member of the family or teacher, caregiver, this metaphor that this is the OCD sort of taking over the brain. And we say, your OCD monster is lying to you. It's playing tricks on your mind and telling you you have to do certain things in order to feel okay. And the kids get it. And a lot of times parents will come in and say, I don't know if my child is being a brat or if this is a compulsion. And I'll say, well, let's ask them because they know. And almost always they'll be able to say, this is OCD versus, no, this was just me really, really not wanting to go there.
I do want to distinguish, though, that according to the DSM, the diagnostic criteria for kids with OCD is that they may or may not know the excessiveness of the diagnosis. However, when we have kids here at the Renewed Freedom Center, we teach them what OCD is. And we also teach them what the OCD monster is, to help them distinguish it from normal everyday behaviors. And for that reason, they do understand how to distinguish between the two. And the goal is to teach them how to live more of a normal life where fears are real. We just don't have to entertain them. And kids will usually know what the difference is. And a lot of times we're the ones who actually have to reassure parents, let your child tell you what is OCD and what isn't, because oftentimes family members will be the ones to become very hyper alert to an OCD behavior and start pointing them out. And that actually wouldn't help a child who has OCD.
So you talked a little bit about the OCD monster, the anxiety monster. Dr. Yip, can you tell us a little bit about how you developed this concept and how you sort of put it to use?
Well, I developed the concept of the OCD monster many, many years ago when I was actually still in grad school, and I was developing the treatment protocol for working with children and families with OCD. And this was part of my dissertation, and I came to this dissertation idea because when I was working with Dr. Charles Mansueto at the Behavior Therapy Center in Washington, D.C., I was working with people who have OCD and they do fine when they're in treatment. However, once they go home, it's almost like everything falls apart. And back then, there wasn't much information about what you do with family members. How do you engage family in treatment? In fact, back then, we never even included family members into treatment. In adult partnerships, we never included the partner into treatment. And we know that families accommodate OCD symptoms and families become servants to OCD. So part of my development of the OCD monster is to help kids understand that this is a real illness that affects the brain. And it's not a result of something they did or family members did or someone else who did something wrong. It's a part of their brain and it's a real disease. However, it's outside of us. So for example, if I ask a person who has cancer, "Do you have cancer?" The person might say, "Yes, I have cancer." If I say, "Well, are you cancer?" The person would say, "No, I am not cancer. Cancer is this entity that is attacking my body. However, I am not fused with it." The problem is in mental health, we don't distinguish that. That's why there's such a huge stigma in mental health, in psychiatric diseases. So we're teaching kids there's nothing to be ashamed of. There's nothing to be embarrassed by because this is a disease of your brain. So, do you have OCD? Yes, I have OCD. Are you OCD? Is OCD part of you? No, OCD is this entity that's invading my brain. So I developed the OCD monster in order to help kids distinguish what is OCD and how it's separated from them.
Most parents, I would assume, are going to take their child to the pediatrician. Would most pediatricians recognize OCD?
I would say that there are some savvy pediatricians that we work a lot with who will recognize anxiety and OCD in kids. Unfortunately, the reality is pediatricians aren't trained in mental health, and they're not trained to recognize the differentiations between one mental illness versus another. What usually happens is that teachers usually are the first to recognize that there's a problem. Sometimes parents will also recognize it. However, then teachers will confirm that there's a problem. And then what the family usually does is go to the pediatrician to get some sort of consultation evaluation on the child. The pediatrician might say, "Okay, it looks like your child has ADHD, or okay, it looks like your child might have anxiety. The pediatrician can say any number of things. The most important thing that families need to understand is if your child has a mental health disorder, it's important for you to go to a mental health specialist. The pediatrician can only do so much to give you an initial assessment. However, to get the appropriate treatment, you really need to go to a mental health specialist.
How would you recommend talking to your kid about OCD?
Well, we do recommend using this metaphor of the OCD monster. And some families feel comfortable discussing that on their own with their family, and others prefer to come in and work with us or with a therapist. We like that as part of the dialogue because it does externalize the OCD and it gives the whole family this idea that we're on the same team working together to defeat the OCD monster, because oftentimes parents and children tend to butt heads because the parents are frustrated that they need to give in to these compulsions, so to speak, and the children become frustrated if their parents won't do that. So the OCD monster is nice language. The other thing that we like to do is normalize OCD. So as a parent, even if that parent does not have OCD, they certainly have had the experience where they do something quirky because they feel that they need to in order to be okay. Although it doesn't make sense logically, I feel that I need to have everything straightened up and all the lights off before I leave the home. So parents will, or perhaps that does make sense logically. However, parents and kids will have this common understanding of the quirky sort of household rules. And we like to use those as examples to normalize what the child's experiencing. Also, if the child articulates any of their thoughts, which may be very shameful or embarrassing to the child, as clinicians, we always normalize those thoughts. I'll say something like, "Oh, I have the same thought." I may or may not be aware of it because my brain doesn't work where I get stuck on that thought. However, with a billion thoughts going through my mind every 60 seconds, chances are I've had the same thought. And we encourage parents to say exactly the same. So often parents will worry that their child is, they'll use this word crazy, or where are they coming up with these ideas and these thoughts? And we actually want, and we encourage parents to almost praise the creativity behind the thoughts and to say, wow, that's a really interesting thought. Right now, it's causing you to be afraid. However, it's interesting.
And last question for today. We've talked a lot about kids and children. How does OCD show up in adolescents? Is there any noticeable differences or things that the audience should know?
You know, I think this goes back to a couple of previous episodes before when we're talking about parenting and the different stages of child development. Again, part of parenting a teenager is teaching them independence, autonomy, and guidance, right? You're guiding them to be independent and autonomous, which means holding teenagers accountable. Now, many family members, rather than holding teenagers accountable, become servants to their OCD. And therefore, part of what parents have to understand is how to draw those boundaries. How do you still support this developmental period of the teenager where you're teaching them autonomy, independence, and not become wrapped up into their OCD, not become servants to their OCD, where now the child overly depends on you to do things for them that they refuse to do. So a lot of parents might see teenagers who become even more rebellious, who become even more hostile, who become even more aggressive because, well, number one, there are hormones that are raging in their bodies at this period. Also because while you're still trying to promote autonomy, the teenager might be trying to do the opposite, which is to reel you into the OCD vicious cycle so that you can assist and participate in the OCD cycle.
Sometimes we see OCD, it becomes obvious for the first time in adolescence because of the shift and change in hormones. So that's something to keep in mind. And the other thing that we see with adolescents, we can sometimes see that they're acting as a typical teenager or adolescent in many areas. And yet, as Dr. Yip was saying, in these certain areas, it's almost as if they revert to being a child. So they may be completely independent and autonomous in all social elements and engaging in social behavior. And yet all of the sudden, as grades become more important as we get older and go into adolescence, we'll see lots of writing, erasing, perfectionism. So we can see a shift.
Great. And I think next episode, we definitely need to talk about the role of the family in OCD. So hope both of you will be up for that.
Absolutely.
That sounds great.
Thank you for listening to the Stressless Life Podcast. You can join the discussion and find more information at thestresslesslifepodcast.com. Please write to us with questions and comments at podcast@thestresslesslife.com. Until next time, stay stressless.